All right, y'all, welcome into the Rockets Collective. I am here with Brad and Will from the Brado and Will Show. I am Brandon Scott from the B Block with B Scott on YouTube, as well as Sports Radio 610. LaShard Binkley, who normally hosts with us as well, is not with us this time, but will be with us next time. He is of SI.com and the Rockets Fuel podcast. And fellas, I want to talk about leadership. If we got a moment, and this is going to be another one of them abbreviated shows, we're not going to be here for a full hour, but I do think we got enough time to sit here and talk about leadership. Rafael Stone, Ime Udoka. I think we all understand that these are guys who are not going anywhere. At the very least, one more year with these guys. And I've heard y'all characterize it, and I'll let y'all speak for yourselves, but I've heard y'all characterize it as kind of a make or break type of season for for Rafael Stone, the Rockets general manager. And I tend to agree. Where I want to start with y'all is articulating what does that mean and what does that look like for you, if you even agree with that, because I know I kind of positioned it that way. Brad, let's start with you. Is this a make or break year for the Rockets general manager, Rafael Stone? And if so, what does that look like to you?
I truly think it is. Again, you're coming off of a pretty long rebuild, and now we make the jump to phase two. You know, we had to phase one, two, three, and we got to get to phase three eventually. It looks like we're still in phase two. So you got to take the jump to phase three. You move for KD to get into phase three. And I know we had the Fred injury, the Steve-O injury, which was not ideal. But going into next year, you got to compete, because I'm assuming this team is not going to take a step backwards, right? They're going to try to at least compete again. But now you have two teams who are going to be gauntlets for a minute. You got San Antonio going to be tough. They're going to come back much better. You got the Thunder, of course. They're not going anywhere anytime soon. And so this Rockets team has to hoop this upcoming year. And a lot of it has to do with what Stone does. The surrounding cast around the Rockets guys has to improve by a ton. We had one of the worst benches of all time in the playoffs. And that has to do, of course, with Steve-O being out and Fred being out too. But there's no excuse to not having floor spacers and extra ball handlers on this Rockets team outside of the main guys on the roster. I look at the Spurs, I look at the Knicks, and I'm like, damn, a lot of these guys can dribble, pass, and shoot, and the Rockets lack a bunch of that. So Stone has to lock in this offseason. And if he doesn't, and he has another dud signing like Dorian Finney-Smith, it's probably clip for him. I'm not going to lie. I think it's clip for him. So he's got to lock in and bring in some good pieces so this team can compete. Last thing I'll say, I'll stay in 10 tones on this. I think they win 60 games this past season with Fred. They won 52. He's giving me 8 wins. I'm telling you that right now. I don't think they would have got over OKC or San Antonio regardless. But my point is, they have a solid team, but they just have to fix the surrounding core 100%. There's so many bad players on this bench that we don't need to be playing going forward. So that's what I think they should do. If they don't improve the bench, I'm good off them. I'm going to be honest. And I love me some Stone. But yeah, he's got to be much better.
Will, what does it say to you, the idea that the Rockets could have been a Fred Van Vliet away from being a 60-win team? Like, to me, on the one hand, if that happens, we're talking about the whole team and the whole season a lot differently, talking about Rafael Stone a lot differently. But on the other hand, you're like, man, you put all your eggs in that basket. Like, you were overly reliant in this case on that part of it working. I don't know. It's a little bit of a tit for tat on that. I don't know how you see it.
Yeah, I don't like the fact that we are, excuse me, that reliant upon Fred VanVleet. I think that it's kind of embarrassing that the team is incapable of operating the moment he goes down, but that's kind of what it is. And I think that's why I do think that this is, he made the worst coach in the league. That's such gas. But I think this is a make or break season for both Ime and Stone, but we're talking about Stone today. And I do think the reason why I say I think it's a make or break season is because we haven't taken that leap in terms of contention. Because the whole reason why you go through the rebuild, the whole reason why you trade for Kevin Durant is to ultimately try to win a championship. Whether you actually get over that hump is a different thing, because, you know, we know how the NBA works. A lot of it is luck based, right? OKC won last year. They probably would have repeated this year if AJ Mitchell and Jalen Williams weren't hurt. You know, we're Rockets fans. We probably won in 2018 if Chris Paul doesn't get hurt. So I'm not saying that the expectation should have been win a championship or lose your job, but the fact that we weren't even in the conversation is a problem. And I think the reason we're in that conversation is because, for as good as Stone is with drafting and trading, re-signing, signing guys in free agency, I think he's pretty good at those things. The one thing he has not done yet is team build. And a lot of that is because for the first half of his time in Houston, his job wasn't to team build. It was to deconstruct the previous team and then asset accumulate. And as of like recently, so I would say, no, honestly, like this is the first season where team construction was really like that important. We haven't really done that yet. And so I think that this offseason, he does have to look at the reality of like going out there and actually constructing a team that can win, because we have talent, we have assets, but we have pieces of a puzzle. We don't have a puzzle yet. And so I think he has to either put it together this offseason, or he has to just hope that what we currently have already works. Because like I said, I do think if we go into next season and we have another 50-ish win season and lose in round one, or maybe we win in round one, but we're like clearly not ready to like be in a contention window, I think you got to start turning some heads, unfortunately. And like I made this point on the Brad and Will show, it's just I just don't want my general manager GMing for his job. That's just my biggest thing. I don't want a GM desperate. And if we don't have a successful season this year, I would imagine Stone starts getting a little desperate, and I don't want that. So, yeah.
Man, I can tell y'all, I felt a lot better about Stone, let's say a year ago, and we weren't doing this show together yet. But if we had had the same conversation a year ago, I'd have felt a lot better about Rafael Stone. But the way this last season played out, and I don't think it's like irredeemable, something that he can't recover from. But I just look at it from top to bottom. Like, we did do the show around the time of the trade deadline and kind of all agreed that their hands were a little bit tied. And there wasn't a whole lot they could do at the trade deadline. And I think there's probably a little bit of faulty logic. And they probably could have done something, but you understand why they would have stood pat and why they did stand pat. But at the same time, you go back to the reasons why they're so hamstrung, if you will, the contracts that they gave out over the offseason last year. I mean, you got two free agent acquisitions that were, at least as contracts, complete duds for you. In terms of Dorian Finney-Smith and Clint Capella, who I think played better than certainly than I was expecting. And I'm not trying to like dump on Clint Capella, but those are two contracts that in retrospect, you could have done a better job of, like you could have been a better steward with the dollar, if that makes sense, than that. And then it, to me, it ended up costing you at the deadline, not being able to add to a roster that you had already traded for Kevin Durant, and it kind of like not pushed your chips all in, but it was officially like a series, like a serious season once you brought in Kevin Durant, traded for Kevin Durant, even if you did get him at a good price. So I just felt like outside of the Kevin Durant trade, which, I'm a fan of and approve of, I thought everything else that they did along the margins just was not good enough, man. Dorian Finney-Smith, who I could have justified that signing at the time. Obviously, that money would have been spent better on a point guard. Who's the point guard? I don't necessarily know. I don't have the answer, but it feel like you could have done something better with your dollar than that. So that's kind of what I look at. It's like the point that Will just made about having puzzles, but or pieces, but not necessarily a puzzle yet. This felt like the year where I wanted to see those pieces come together as a puzzle, and they just never did between the signings that they brought in, the acquisitions that they made, and the internal growth that here we are talking about again a year later that we were hoping for last year. I wouldn't say that the young players were awful, but they damn sure weren't good enough. So I just look at all of it and I just feel like, man, this past year was a step back. If becoming the number two seed 2 seasons ago and finally going to the playoffs for the first time in the Rafael Stone era was a step forward, last year felt like 2 steps back to me.
True. To respond to a couple of the
Which one
comments
you
about
want?
the shame on us, he was just well, we're clear, he wasn't saying shame on fans. He was saying shame on the fans who take what he says out of context. Funny enough, the very thing that ended up happening with that quote. So that's what he was talking about. And then he what was it, the he's been airing because he knew his job was on the line. I don't think My thing with that is, I don't think up until this season there was even any questionable decisions. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, B. Scott and Brad, but I want to say this is the only deadline where we didn't make a trade. in his time here.
They never make moves at the deadline.
That's not true. We are very active at the deadline.
Very?
So yes,
the Rockets?
Yes.
Who would have been last year?
Let me take you through it.
I don't know about that.
He was here. He traded everybody. He traded everybody that first year. The second season, we got Dennis Schroeder. The third season, that was the year we got Boban, because we traded it was Garrison and Bruno. We traded them to Atlanta. We got some seconds out of that. We made moves there. Yeah, that's when we got Steven Adams.
That was before the deadline, but I'll give you that one. That was before the deadline.
I mean, it's deadline trade, technically.
Yeah. When was Kelly? How did they get Kelly Olynyk?
Deadline.
It was deadline, a deadline trade. Yeah.
So, and then the year after that, we didn't get a player per se, but we made moves for second round picks at the deadline. This is the only year we didn't make
a trade. I guess I'm going off the last 2 years. They're not really making a move for a player. That's because going into this deadline, I'll say I knew, like, he'd be chilling at the deadline. So I wasn't thinking he's going to make anything shake. But, yeah.
Did y'all not feel like there was more of an urgency, though? Like, and maybe his hands were tied, but it's like this felt like the year, tendencies be damned, of like, yo, we're seeing how this is going. Need a point guard. Need shooting. Need some help. And it was just like the whole it's not our year thing. I think how the commenter was saying and how he was saying, like, don't take me out of context. But that didn't feel good where it was like.
No, that's okay, not out of context at all.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you went and got Kevin Durant. You were the number two seed last year. It feels like the West is wide open. And you're just kind of good to twiddle your thumbs, man. I felt like there was an urgency there that should have been there.
Yeah, well, I'll cut you off. Go ahead. My fault.
Yeah, I just say that to say the idea that he doesn't make margin moves, that is incorrect. This is the only season where he did not make a margin move. And I also think we need to throw in the context that is up until, like I said, maybe this season, if you want to be technical, maybe last season, the Rockets were in straight talent
acquisition.
Acquisition, yes. We were in talent acquisition or asset acquisition mode. There was not margin moves for win now pieces because you were trying to add to your vault, not detract from it. And so with this season, like I wanted them to make a move, but and I also agree, Stone probably should not have said it's not like that. That was probably something you can think that probably shouldn't have said it, but he wasn't wrong. I hate to be that guy. We said this before the deadline. When Fred and Steve-O went down, we were cooking. You talked about at the beginning of this podcast. I think that you can maybe say it's an indictment on Stone. This team is so reliant upon those two guys. And I mean, that's a fair criticism, I would say. But we are. I hate to say it. We are Fred VanVleet and Steve Adam merchants. And the moment they went down, we saw what happened. And so the moment they go down, I agree. It was not our year. That, you know what I'm saying? That is just what happens. It was not. And so I don't think it would be smart to pour assets into a sinking ship at the deadline, as opposed to saving those assets for now in the offseason when you have a bit more flexibility and actually addressing the problem, not trying to patch a sinking ship. Let's actually just get a new ship. Because, I mean, let's be real. That's Brad's talking about a new bench. There are significantly less guys who should be here next season than that were already on the roster. You need a new ship.
Yes.
And it's easier to get that new ship in the offseason. You know what I'm saying? So save your assets until then. And so that's why, like, for me, I don't think that Stone, he, like I said, probably shouldn't have said it, but I don't think he was incorrect. And I don't necessarily disagree with the decision to be patient. But what I think that does mean, and that's what I've been saying the whole time, I think that all that does is shift the onus until right now, until the offseason. There cannot be complacency now. If we're so complacent in game one at 82, then I think you can start having the question marks and start saying, all right, what's going on? Because we clearly saw what the problems were last season, where we are going to still be reliant upon Fred and Steven Adams, who are going to be a year older and a year removed from lower body season and injuries. So like we took this last podcast, I don't think they're going to be the same. And so if we're going into next season relying upon that, that's one of the things where I think next season is make or break. Because if we go into next season and it's kind of the same thing, and just be honest with you, I don't really believe there's going to be any reason to believe that things would be that drastically different. I don't want my GM GMing for his job in that scenario. So the lack of accountability that doubled down. I mean, what? I don't know. I don't know what he's supposed to say, per se.
Yeah, so aside from what he said, look, forget what he said for a second. It's that he said it and it was almost like, Will, you're agreeing with him. I kind of agree with him too, but it was almost like too real because he was saying
he shouldn't have said it.
He was saying it, but it was also like the actions. It was like, okay, well, it's not really a whole lot you can do. But then going back to the earlier point of you are kind of hands tied, hamstrung because of your own making. So that's kind of the issue there where you're kind of like chasing your tail a little bit when you try to like wrap your mind around the whole thing. But I want to ask y'all this before we move off of this topic and move on to Ime Udoka. Is there a, when we talk about make or break, for y'all, especially as fans, is there a like result? Like, is there, are you putting it at, hey, they got to get out the first round, or they got to be competitive in the second round, or they got to win X amount of games?
You got to be a contender. You got to be one of the better teams in the West. And like, it needs to be, like I said, you don't got to win it next season. But how we knew by January, this team wasn't a contender. That can't be the case next season. And then, I want to respond to that. My thing with that, though, is what team is prepared if $25 million gets hurt? What team is prepared to go an entire season without the starting point guard? I think that's if Jamal Murray got hurt tomorrow, the Nuggets don't have a plan for that.
To be fair, the Spurs probably wanted their starting point guard to get.
Yeah, I'll say yeah.
They would have been telling if that was the case.
I don't think any team is prepared for their starting point guard.
I was gonna say that's the one team.
$25 million in salary to just mind you, 25 plus the how much people making like 14.
San Antonio would have been good losing 50.
14 with Steve-O. There's not that many teams that are prepared to just pivot from that.
Okay, so
you're right, Will. I think Will's right on that front.
I was going to say, this is actually a good segue into Ime Udoka as a championship coach. And we can talk about that in just a second. I first want to tell y'all about SeatGeek. We got a new sponsor, SeatGeek, place to get your tickets to not just sporting events, but any kind of concert or anything like that. SeatGeek is the place to go. Let's hear from them. I am so excited for summer. I'm so excited for the fall. After that, you got concert season coming up. You got football season coming up. And you talk about a way to get out of the house. You're looking for something to do, maybe even a gift idea. I've actually been looking for the best deals that I could find on concert tickets, which is why I want to introduce you to SeatGeek. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, including sporting events, also festivals. All right, so SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. So what I would do is look out for the green dots, because green means good. Red means bad. These are amazing deals, so you want to get in on them. And of course, I've got a code for you guys. You can use the code COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek. All right, so shout out to SeatGeek. We mentioned the situation that Raphael Stone was in, kind of being having his hands tied. And it for me, segues into Ime Udoka to a degree, because, Will, you made the point. What do you do when you lose $25 million on the roster, when you lose your starting point guard? What team is prepared for a situation like that?
Your starting point guard, your sixth man. We had like almost $40 million in just dead salary this year.
Well, and I meant even before, like this is before Steve-O. So I was starting with Fred, but of course, Steve-O, as we all know, as Rockets fans and people who follow the Rockets, the whole offensive rebounding part, it wasn't just like a novelty. This was really a part of what they did. It was a big part of their offense to kind of make up for their lack of shooting that ended up getting exposed once he got injured. But it brings me back when I think about your point of Fred getting injured and what do you do? I do feel like this is where I go to Ime Udoka and say, all right, this was the time. I don't know what your plan was for Reed Shepherd beforehand, but this was the time to play him more. Like it was like pick a struggle. We're not gonna make moves, or we can't make moves. Well, gotta play the kid more, right? And it was like they weren't making moves, but also Reed Sheppard wasn't starting. We saw what their record was when Reed Sheppard did start. He wasn't always closing out games. It took him a while to figure that part out. So this is where the criticism is like hand in hand of Stone not necessarily having a backup plan for Fred VanVleet, and then the in-house backup plan being Reed Sheppard not being fully unleashed and implemented the way I think a lot of us wanted to see it early on. Now, Reed's performance in the playoffs did not necessarily justify all of that Reed Sheppard talk that we had in the regular season, but we understand the gravity. We understand the importance of that. So I'm curious of where y'all are at on M.A. Udoka right now. I framed it as, is he a championship coach? But just to start this conversation, what is the confidence level in the Rockets head coach right now? Start with you, Brad.
Yeah, and I'll say this to this comment. Yes, Ime has been to a championship. I'll give you that. The Rockets, it's been a minute. I know. More so, is he the guy to bring the Rockets to a championship? So I think it's a solid conversation for sure. But yeah, I mean, he's obviously a solid coach, right? He's flawed. He's stubborn. And we saw it this year. He did have a flawed roster he was working with, and he did not make the adjustments necessary to work with a roster that didn't really complement his strengths. That's why we said, you're so relying on guys like Fred and Steve-O, because those guys go down what they call possession maxing, right? You know, Fred's going to take care of the ball, not turn over the rock. Steve-O's going to get you a multitude of offensive rebounds. So we got a ton of possessions, because we're not taking a bunch of threes, but we got a ton of possessions, a bunch of boards, and we're beating teams that way by playing good defense. I can't speak. But yeah, going into next year now, you get your guys back. Hopefully Fred's at the same level again. I think he can take the Rockets to a championship. I don't think it's likely. I think he could. I don't think it's likely, again, because they got two gauntlets to go through. But I really do think it's reliant on surrounding this team with the right pieces. I'm going to say it a million times. I say this every episode, but you got to get some 3-and-D guys and some ball handlers. And I think he can make some shake. Again, I think they went 60 last year. I think if they stay, we need KD to stay healthy again. I don't know if he's giving me 78 games again this upcoming season. It's probably not likely. It's going to be 38 this upcoming year. We got lucky that he played 78 games and he played over 2,000 minutes. So it's no surprise. Look at B. Scott. It's no surprise he did get hurt.
Bro.
So they got to find a way to cut down the minutes. I don't know what that's going to do to the record. We'll see. B. Scott, I'll cut to you and then I'll go back because I saw your facial expression.
All I want to say is it just feels like a wasted KD year.
Yeah, you
know,
sadly.
And I don't know who I want to blame, who I want to be mad at, but I'm mad at somebody and I'm mad at it. That's all I wanted to say. That was my reaction to that. That was why I gave that reaction to what you were saying, because you were talking about KD and the health and the efficiency and how he played. And I'm like, bruh, I don't know how many more of those. He definitely has fewer of those ahead of him than he has behind him. So that's just a real frustrating part. And then the first Rocket season and he does it. It's frustrating.
I do agree with this comment by Shangoon and the next one as well. He definitely 1,000%, 1,010% got outcoached by J.J. Redick. I think that's a huge reason why the Rockets went down 0-3 in that series. I won't sit here and tell you that is not a lie. Like, that is the truth, like 100%. He has to be much better in that aspect. But again, if they have their guys, I don't think it's an issue. And again, it is the conversation that they're too reliant on these two people, and it shouldn't be the case 100%. So I understand that take. Again, I was calling for him to potentially be fired after the series because he was way too stubborn for my liking. But this is a coach where you really have to give him the right roster, which I don't know if that says a lot about him.
He didn't get out-coached by Kerr.
You said what?
I said he didn't get out-coached by Kerr. That was
by Kerr? Issue. I was talking you're looking at this comment.
Yeah, right? Kerr did not coach him. No, Redick for sure did, but Kerr did not coach him. But
Jalen Green just went outside. But yeah, but go ahead, Will.
No, what I was going to say, I think a lot of the smoke that people have for Ime really should be for Stone. Like, I've said this, I don't think Ime is a top three problem with this team. I think the biggest problem with this team, and I'm going to be reductive here, it sucks. Like, it's not a good team. We were a team that we won last year because of Fred VanVleet turnover suppressing and Steven Adams double big second chance opportunities. our offense sucked last year, right? And I'm going to be honest with you, the reason why our offense sucks, go look at any team in the NBA that has a quote-unquote good offense. What they all have in common is multiple guys who can dribble and shoot, and they tend to also have one of the better offensive engines in the league. They tend to have a Luka, a Jokic, a Bron, a Halliburton, a Jalen Brunson. They tend to have guys like that. You look at, like I said, the finals we just got done watching. The Spurs and Knicks have several guys who can attack closeouts and shoot threes. We have one of those guys in KD, maybe two if you count Reed. But outside of that, none of the other guys on this team can shoot a basketball or dribble a basketball. None of them can. And I don't care if you get Greg Popovich out of retirement to coach this team. You're not going to coach a team. Like, the whole point of coaching offense implies the defense has a reason to respect your offensive players. I can't coach an offense when the opposing team is perfectly fine with Tari and Okogie and Amin and Shingun and Jabari. Like, the only people they guard are KD and Reed. That's it. I can't, you know what I'm saying? If they're going to pack the paint with everybody else, and why should they? And no disrespect, because Tari Eason's going an entire month without making an open three. Like, I'm sorry. You can't win basketball that way. And I think it's – I'm not going to sit here and say that Ime is above criticism, because he's not. He's most definitely not. Like, there are definitely things that I can point to and say, that was your fault, right? I do think he got outcoached at times during the postseason. I won't put that all on him. I think that was a top to bottom. I think everybody who participated in that playoff series – failed. But yes, he got outcoached by JJ Redick, right? There was a couple of games where, like I know that Spurs game where they put Wimby on a men. I thought that was very jarring that he had no counter for that. And I think the counter for that was pretty obvious. It was just use him in as a screener, use him as a dribble handoffs a little bit more, right? We didn't do any of that. We kind of tried the same thing over and over again. It didn't work. I don't like the fact that Reed Shepard did not play more, especially considering it was very obvious that we played better with him on the court than with him off of it. So I'm not saying Ime is above criticism, but what I am saying, I think the roster is the biggest issue. And unfortunately, Ime didn't build the roster. And I think that saying that the coach, we were missing $25 million with our starting point guard in Fred VanVleet. Like I said, I want to say if Steve was making like $14 million in our six man, and that's $39 million right there. And then DFS was here, but I'm going to be real, DFS was unplayable for the entire season. So that's another, I want to say $14 million on top of that. So quick math, that's what, 53? Did I do that right? I think that's...
Yeah, it's like 52, 58 around there. Yeah, I tweeted that a million times. I'll find
it. Yeah, something like that. $53 million in salary that you simply cannot play. You I said two of them are hurt, and one of them is terrible. And despite the fact that we had $53 million in unplayable salary, we still won 52 games. We made the playoffs. And I think it's kind of funny when people like bring up 2022 as an indictment on Ime as a coach. And it's like, gang, he went to the finals. Like, I would love for my bad season to be we went to the finals. I haven't seen that in my lifetime. So I don't know. I think, yeah, like I agree with Lakeshore Jerry. Yes, he doesn't have the most offensive creativity. I think bad offensive personnel mixed with not the best offensive coach breeds catastrophe on offense. I completely agree with that. But I think that there's a lot of coaches in the NBA, you probably feel that same way about, if they did not have offensive personnel. We don't have any. Like I said, the only offensive personnel that we have in terms of, like I said, ball handling and shooting is Kevin Durant sometimes and Reed Shepard sometimes. Like, that's just not a recipe for success. So I think a lot of that smoke has to go towards roster construction, and that's on Stone. And so, like, if next season comes, and we actually have guys on this roster who can dribble, who can shoot, who can do simple, you know, concepts offensively. We have guys who won't go a month without making threes. And Ime still can't, you know, get the most out of that unit. Then I would look at him and say, yeah, that's on you. But until then, I can't have smoke for the guy. Like I said, I don't think Phil Jackson coaches this team to a championship. I just don't. It's too flawed.
So I do want to agree just that it was a recipe for disaster when you put all of these things that we're talking about together of not having enough guys who can dribble, who have enough of the combination of dribbling, shooting, and passing skills. And so you don't have that. And on top of that, you've got a head coach who lacks offensive creativity, right? Like, you need, just in general, you need guys that can dribble, shoot, and pass. It's basketball. You need that. But absent of that, you are going to have to get creative with what you do if you're lacking that to some degree. And they were lacking that sorely. And so they just did not have the answers. They didn't have the personnel or the scheme to – they didn't have the personnel, and then they did not have the scheme to make up for their lack of personnel, if that's a proper way to put it, if you want to hold both Stone and Ime Udoka accountable. But I do want to say this before we go over the prize picks and win the people some money and take a question or two before we get out of here, is that this topic was inspired by watching the finals, following the narratives about the coaches, watching the coaches coach, and following how they were talked about. And like Mitch Johnson versus Mike Brown, who Mike Brown has gotten the short end of the stick and I think been railroaded a time or two before now. So I was glad to see him have his moment. But then also Mitch Johnson as a young coach, people kind of looking at it and really, I think for the first time getting real critical on a national scale with him. And I was like, man, if the Rockets were in this position, here's my point. Let's say the roster is properly situated in a way like San Antonio's was and like the Knicks was, where they were able to make the finals. Think of any team that's made the finals the last few years. Now, do you trust the coach to press the right buttons the way, say, Mike Brown did and the way previous coaches have that have won championships? That is to me an open question. I'm not saying I don't believe in it, but I do think that Ime Udoka has a little bit to prove in that regard, since we do have some of these criticisms. If nothing else on that, we can go to prize picks and win the people some money. I don't know what y'all think now. Earlier when we've done prize picks in the past, when we've done this in the past, we've had NBA games. This is our first, I'm just realizing this is our first episode post NBA season, especially since we've had prize picks. So let's get into some women's hoops, do you say? Or we could do anything like, so this is important to point out about prize picks. Y'all can bet on basketball. Y'all can bet on the World Cup. Y'all can bet on baseball, tennis, golf, whatever it is that you're feeling. And there's even more here that I'm not even looking at. But
video games in there.
Bro, they got video games. They got the KBO. You can bet on Korean baseball.
They got video games on this?
It's wild. We're going to keep it simple enough. And
it's low-key a method on the video games thing.
Let's go. World Cup. USA game.
Well, I was going to say, what y'all feeling? We ain't got to do basketball. What y'all feeling?
Oh, wait, let's go Team USA. What are they on there?
Let's see. A lot of you use Uzbekistan.
I'm about to hit a game tomorrow, for real. Let me see.
Mexico. Nah, when does the UFC look at me trying to bet US? I don't even know when they play again.
All right, my fault. Go back to WNBA.
When my boys play again. Go USA.
They play Friday. Go USA. Friday.
God bless America Friday. Up in this bad boy, man.
Yes, sir.
Hey, I ain't going to lie to y'all. Since we talk about it, I did do the thing where I went through all the groups and was like trying to pick all the African countries and was just like, man, I'm rooting for everybody black. And then earlier, I look up and Ghana is playing Panama. And I'm like, oh, Panama is tricky. You know what I'm saying? Because they got us too. And then, you know, it's a.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I went ahead and went with Ghana anyway. So,
there you go.
What y'all thinking about the WNBA, man? Y'all want to go just.
More everything on Asia Wilson. And yeah, Late Show Jerry said everything on Asia.
I was gonna say put some stock into my future Houston comment, Anissa Morrow. She's tough with it. She gonna get you 10 rebounds if that's what that said. There she go. Oh, it went away.
Okay, hold on. Wait.
You're looking for Asia. She on the right.
Oh
yeah, I see Asia.
Yeah, let's get that one. Yeah, she gonna
let's get that one gonna, in. All right, yeah, so we're gonna Morrow's, go Asia yeah, 19 and a half. They got so in about an hour and a half from now, the Aces have the Phoenix Mercury. We're going to go the more on the 19 and a half points for Asia.
Yep.
All right. Who are you saying? You want to go local?
My Connecticut comment? Sun girl. I don't know if she was on the point spread. This must be a points page.
Yeah, this is a points page.
What'd you see her on?
She was at the very, very top. Yeah.
Go back to.
To points, rebounds, and assists.
No, I think it's popular.
Yeah, she was in the second row on the left. Oh, she in the middle now. Okay. She gonna get you. Ooh.
Ooh,
can you click on that to take out that demon or whatever that thing is? Okay.
Oh, yeah,
let's Let's go more. She's gonna give me eight. She's gonna give me nine boards. She's nice.
All right.
She's gonna be nice in the comments, Uni, too. I'm telling y'all, she's gonna be nice.
All right, so future comment Anisha Moreau, or am I saying it right? Anisha Moreau, gonna go more on the 8.5 rebounds for her, and we're gonna go more on the 19.5 points for Asia Wilson. That's Prize Picks. Let's go ahead and lock that in, submit that lineup, and Prize Picks, man. It is the best place to win money while you're watching sports. All you got to do is play $5, get $50 instantly in lineups, and use that promo code HMA. Again, play $5, get $50 instantly in lineups. Prize Picks, the best place to win money while you're watching sports. All right, y'all. So, got that in. Had a good conversation about Rafael Stone, the Rockets general manager, Ime Udoka, the Rockets head coach. Any questions that we have not gotten to? Again, this is
the one I want to talk about.
Go ahead and pull
which
it up.
Which one? Will?
733 is why does Stone seem to have no pressure? I think he does. I don't. I think this offseason will. I think we learned a lot about him this offseason. That's kind of my whole stance.
Well, wait. Can before you go forward? Can we differentiate pressure? Because like I think there's plenty of pressure on the part of fans, media. Pundit,
yeah, I agree. The public, with that.
There's a different pressure conversation to be had about, you know, knives and pitchforks from the public and the actual people that's in charge, which is the Fertitta family, Tillman, his son Patrick. Like, I don't know, and just throwing it back to you, Will, I don't know how close he is, how warm or hot the seat is with the Fertitta family.
Yeah, I don't think that it's. I don't think he's jinning for his job yet. But I do think that he understands that if the Rockets go out there and have another season where there is no significant steps forward, it starts reflecting bad on him. You know, I for better or for worse, Ime definitely has more job security right now than Stone does. So if they have to make a decision on who to change things up to make things better, they're definitely going to pick Stone. And like I said, I want to be clear, I like Stone. I am not a Stone hater at all. I think he's done a really good job so far. But the last thing you should want as a fan, I keep saying this, is you do not want a GM who is jimmying for his job. That is just the worst scenario to be in as a fan. They're not trading KD. I don't know why we keep talking about KD. He's not getting moved. But yeah, you don't want your GM jimmying for his job. And so if we have another season where things don't look the way they're supposed to, I think he does get in the hot seat then. And I don't want that. I don't want him having to GM to save his job. So that being said, I think he has to understand it himself. So I think he understands this is that offseason. That's why we talked about on the last podcast, bro. I don't think he has a luxury of patience. I just don't think he does.
I agree.
So I think this is an off season where Stone has to have some looks inwards and say, look, if it don't happen this year, I could be on the outside looking in. So no, I think he does see pressure.
Agree. Any other questions? We had one earlier.
Should he ask for a trade? Man, what? Why should he ask for a trade?
Oh, this one? You talking about this?
No. Should I hope he asked for a trade? He should be asking to. Yeah, go say what's up to DeAndre Ayton and Jackson Hayes, man.
You know, Alpi, and to his credit, I'm sure he is, but Alpi need to have his ass in the gym.
Absolutely.
That's where Alpi need, because no matter where he playing, his game has to evolve and has to improve. He's a very, very good player. I think we're all high on Alperen Sengun as a basketball player.
Yes.
But there are unfortunately some limitations to what his bag is. And I think he's just got to get better. And to his credit, I think he has gotten better. But he ain't in no position to be demanding no trade. If anything, his head is on a swivel. Alp is hitting refresh on his phone and checking his notifications. So
yeah, I was gonna say this about Sengun. Yeah, he definitely should not be asking for any trade. He has to improve, like in a multitude of areas, like on the court. Like he takes the most shots in the paint, non-restricted area, and he's not shooting that at a good field goal percentage. That has to improve 100%. He's got to get a midi. He's got to get a consistent three ball. He has to get more confident on his three balls. He just has to be more efficient as a whole. His hook shot is his bread and butter. He's got to make it. If he's going to get to the line as much as he does, he's got to make his free throws. This is coming from a guy who loves Alperen Sengun. So I can keep it 100 with him. He's got to improve at a bunch of areas, and his efficiency has to be up. He's capable of giving me a 60 true shooting. He's got to do it. So he's got to improve. I think he can, but he definitely has to. So he's not in a position to be asking for any trade. But that's the last question I really had.
I just want to ask one more. We can wrap up.
All right. Which one was it? I got you.
If he gets a shot up for shooting threes, and I am not saying this to hate Shingo. Matter of fact, I take his jersey off my wall. It's back there. Matter of fact, he's probably the only one that's in view, huh? Y'all probably see that jersey. Yeah.
Yeah, I see it. Right, it's there. Popping. Yeah, it's popping up.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And I got two more in my closet. So I don't, it's not even trying to hate. He's a 28% three-point shooter on his career. In no scenario should our offense be outpacing Shingun shooting threes. That is a turnover. That is a shot that we should not want. Now, if he comes back next season, you know, with an improved jumper, then we can have a conversation. But I mean, at that point of the season, he finished season shooting 30% from three. That's bad offense. And I think the other thing too is stuff. You don't take shooting leaps mid-season. That's off-season stuff. So yeah. In terms of the season, and we're trying to execute good offense, and that's not just Shingun, bro. A man should be shooting no threes. Every time a man took a three last season, I said it was a turnover.
Yeah, and he felt like he was shooting a lot of them early, too.
He just digressed. He digressed so much.
Jayshon Tate shooting threes, turnover.
Well, and this was a problem with me, with Udoka, and I don't know if I was blaming Udoka or Amen himself, but I'm like, y'all don't understand by now that they baiting you into standing over there waiting to take that three. Like, move, man. Set a screen, cut toward the basket, do something. But don't stand over there. That's bait. That's bait every time.
The opposing team would rejoice if our offense came down to a mid and Shingun shooting threes over and over again. That would be a great night for them. And like, if our offensive players are taking a shot, the defensive players are like, yes. I think that tells you that's not a good shot. So, no, that I, he shouldn't have shot him.
Should
have shot him. Be honest with you.
Hey, in his defense, Shingun did have a little stretch there, either mid-season or late season, where all of a sudden, Shingun was knocking down a three or two a game. I don't know if y'all remember that. I was trying to figure that out. I was like, is this what we doing now?
You talking about that Pelicans game? And he started hooping after that. I know you're talking about.
It was like, yo, is this what we doing now? And it turns out it's not what we're doing now. But I would love to see it though. To the point, like, I wish it was a part of his game.
It has to be. It has to be.
I mean, then I'm not having these weird, awkward conversations about how these two really good young players don't fit perfectly with each other, absent of three great shooters, right? We've talked about this before on the podcast, and we can wrap up. But, like, we all believe that Amen and Shingun can play together. But to me, that means that everything else around it has to be damn near perfect.
Yep.
It means that, like, instead of right now, how they have two non-shooters playing with one great shooter and then two okay to good to inconsistent shooters, right? Like, everybody else around you's got to be closer to that KD shooting level, or at the very least, hitting open threes, as Brad has talked about plenty of times, hitting open threes if you're Jabari Smith Jr. at a better than 38% clip, right? I was looking around the other day, kind of thinking about this exact conversation, and seeing like guys like Julian Shan, look up what Julian Champagne and OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges and guys who were key cogs on championship level teams this year that just played in the finals, and see what they shoot from three when they're wide open, right? Compared to what the guys on this team shoot. And it's a night and day difference. So yeah, man, it's somebody damn it got to be able to shoot some threes somewhere. I don't know who it's gonna be, but it need to happen. Shingun,
the whole damn team, man.
I don't care who, but hey, somebody more than what they got. All right. I feel like that's fair enough to say. But yeah, if nothing else, and I see the comments still coming in, I want to first of all just thank everybody for being in and involved, active in the chat. Make sure that y'all are subscribed to the Rockets Collective if you are not already. As the prompt here says, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And check us out wherever it is that you get your podcast as well. You can get us in the audio-only form as well. We do this at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, and we really enjoy getting a chance to chop it up with y'all. So we appreciate the participation. That's it for this edition of the Rockets Collective. For Brad and Will from the Brad and Will Show, for LaShawn Binkley in his absence of SI.com and the Rockets Fuel Podcast, I am Brandon Scott. From the B Block with B Scott on YouTube and Sports Radio 610. And we'll catch y'all next time.